This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 480, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 480. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and sitting in with me this week for a vacationing Josh Flanagan is Paul Montgomery.
I'm back, fools.
Paul is from panels.net. He's from the Old Comics Podcast, and it says here, Paul,
yeah,
in your bio that you also used to host this show.
It's true.
Is that true?
That is true for what, like a year or something, or 2 years? I don't know what it was, but it was a good old time. Woody Abbott Abadoo time, me and you and Joshua.
It was a good time. Good to have you back.
It's good to be back. I was excited when I found out that Josh would be away. And
we all get
not
excited.
The, not that Josh happens. Would be away, but that you needed a tag in. So I'm happy. It is my honor and pleasure to be here to talk about comic books.
He's currently cowering from the sun
somewhere. I saw a picture of Josh somewhere where there's like crystal clear waters, and I was like, that's not Josh's natural habitat at all. But
you couldn't see Josh because the light was bouncing off his skin and it was absorbing into the camera. We are iFanboy. We like comics, and we can read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books, talk about some other stuff. We'll read some listener mail. It'll all be a fun time. And here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show, so there'll be some spoilers. So exercise your caution. This week, I had the pick of the week, Paul.
Yeah?
And I remember when you were on the show, Josh mm-hmm. and I used to blabber on about Astro City all the time. And
yes.
You didn't quite love it as much as we did. But Astro City 22 was the pick of the week. And this was really interesting for a number of reasons. I really I'm curious as to where Kurt Busiek's head is right now. Because the previous arc to this was all about superheroes who were over the hill and coming to terms with being too old for the job.
And it's like that first teaser trailer for The Incredibles when he can't fit his costume on. And
in this issue, it's a one-shot all about a retired hero and how tough it is for him to adjust. Not tough, but just his life after being a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just coming back, you're just like, what is... What is Kurt Busiek worried about now?
This is a cry for help or something? Yeah. I'm here to say,
Kurt, you can still do it.
I didn't read the previous arc, but I read this because you made it the pick of the week. And I was like, yeah, I'd like to read an issue of Astro City. And so I checked it out, and this was excellent. So I completely understand why it was the pick of the week, especially compared with other books this week.
But one of those rare times excellent. Where there was a fill-in artist in Astro City. It's usually Brent Anderson. There's been... Mm-hmm. A couple here and there. This was Jesus Marino, mm-hmm. who did a really fine job of filling in.
This is really nice.
The art
still
was really fantastic.
Felt like Astro City.
It did. In fact, even though I knew it was a fill-in artist, about halfway through the issue, I was so absorbed in what was going on that I sort of forgot that it was a fill-in artist because it really did feel like Astro City.
And it's just, it totally works as something like if you hadn't read previous issues of this new generation of Astro City, you can totally just grab this. It's like an episode of The Twilight Zone, but instead of it being bad stuff, it's kind of pleasant.
Yeah. Kind
of a nice stop off and about a guy who finds contentment in retirement, basically.
Yeah, so this is about the character called Starfighter, who I'm trying to find his analog. There's not really a direct analog in Marvel or DC. He's kind of Nova-ish.
He's kind of Nova-ish. He's kind of
Captain Marvel.
Dial H for hero.
Yeah. But so he's retired. We meet this character in the beginning. He's got bitchin' facial hair, which is how you kind of know it's still in the Astro City universe, because he's got sort of 70s style.
It's right out of a Sam Peckinpah movie.
He's doing a book tour. He's a writer, and then when the tour's over, he flies away from the store. He's buying. Oh, he's checking out of the hotel. That's why he's got a bag.
Right. Well, he brought back stuff for the kids.
Right, and he flies away and goes through a portal, ends up in this fantasy world, and it's also kind of like what was that character that looked exactly like Green Arrow in the 80s DC universe? Warlord. Kind of like that.
Oh,
too.
Warlord. Okay, I thought he was going to say like Dreadstar.
But they're all sort of similar like that. He goes off into this other dimension where he lives with his family, who are all from that dimension, and he met his wife when he was being a superhero called Starfighter, who had this sort of cosmic power, and he used like runes or spells to access his abilities that he drew in the sky, which I really liked that effect.
Yeah, he just traces it, you know, like a, I don't know, kind of like a Star of David or something. But like he first saw them when he was in service in Vietnam. He was over there in Nam before he had the mustache. And
I like that. I really like that. There's a temple here.
Everybody's like, what the hell are you talking about? and then you slowly realize, like, no, nobody else can see that because it's a cosmic temple. It's like a Morrison temple.
It happens all the time.
It's like seeing chrome tigers and stuff. And yeah, and it takes him to this other world, but he can also use it, you know, sort of like Green Lantern style to like form different powers. Like he does one sort of stencil in the air and it creates like a stealth thing over him so that, you know, his enemies can't see him,
right?
That kind of thing.
I like this, first of all, as a one-shot, there's a lot of story in here.
Mm-hmm.
You really got a great sense of this character, who I really liked a lot, and I would be totally happy to see him again.
To the point that I wondered, having not read the first run of Astro City, if this was a character that was returning.
I don't recall ever seeing him before. Great character, but it was filled with a lot of... And you basically, this was a overview of a career, but not, it didn't feel like we were just going through, then I did this, and then I did this, and then I did, it was very organically told. I really liked the bit about the sidekick character.
Yeah.
Who he brought along, he tried to train a kid to take over for him, but he was kind of like Jason Todd. He was a hothead. He was too brutal. So Starfighter used a rune to make the kid forget.
He's a Tanadum.
Yeah. Well, he didn't forget he was a...
Well,
so he just forgot how to make the runes.
But it's still kind of sad and weird.
Oh, totally. Because like, you see him, he's now he makes his living at conventions, signing autographs. He's overweight. He's got a really bad goatee. And it's like, I was Quark, partner of Starfighter, and selling his autograph and being a drunk and, you know, yelling how.
And then he's in an alleyway and he's like stumbling through and he's trying to do the stencil and you see it's like this crappy, you know, shape in the air and, you know, and it's just not working for him.
But I just thought as a one-shot story, this told a really great tale of a great character. And there's highs and lows. There's a nice romance with his wife. And I just thought this guy was really sort of a cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's having a beer in his tropical dimensional world of dragons flying around. And
yeah, he had a really great look, like a really interesting superhero like power set. As we mentioned, like it's not an easy elevator pitch, and it's not like he's, you know, just a straight up analog of Green Lantern or Superman, which is it would normally be, when you're just like, okay, I need a superhero in here who's kind of like, you know, a generic version of this, and to tell this other story.
Actually, you know what? Now that I look at it, he might be a Starman analog, because not just this giant star, but like. He starts off in sort of the traditional costume, but by the end he's wearing like a trench coat and regular clothes, and he sort of goes off to have a family life, which is like the way that Starman ended.
Yeah, I mean, I get like it's
elements.
There if you
I think
want
there's
it.
Elements of that in there. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just thought this was super great, and this was another one of those times where you see how Kurt Busiek is one of those masters of the form, and he can tell a really great one shot story. He can tell a really great 6-part story. He can tell a really great miniseries. He can do anything you want, and this was a great artist pairing too.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's you know, being able to decide, is this a 2-issue story? Is this a 1-issue story? Is this, you know, a 6-issue arc? Whatever. That's a skill that not every creative team has, and we'll be talking about that a little bit more in the episode. Right. So you get into the convergent stuff. But yeah, this is just a really satisfying one shot. And it does make me wanna come back and read
next
month.
Did you see the cover and the log line for next month's issue?
It's a gorilla dude, right?
He's new in town and he's a talking gorilla. Everybody say hi, and it's a gorilla taking a selfie with the Empire State Building esque building in the back. So I feel like that's right up your alley, Paul.
I was like, yeah, sign me up. I'm into that.
It's like, what can I write that would specifically be for Paul Montgomery?
Yeah, we'll continue reading this book. Absolutely.
So we've talked about Astro City a lot. This is an issue, Astro City 22, that you can totally pick up and get a sense of the feel of the story and totally get a really satisfying tale. Or if you're someone who's read it in the past but may not be reading the current series, this is another. You should pick this one up and check it out. This is what Astro City does well, and just tell a really human story behind the backdrop of superheroes.
This is a really nice heart too.
Yes,
it's just a great Busiek heart too. Like when we say like retired superhero, you think of like, you know, Frank Miller stories, and no, this is just really, it's a warm story. I liked it.
I felt really good afterwards. Like he just sits back in the tent, he has a beer, and he's watching his kids play. And he's enjoying the day, and that was really, especially in contrast to the last story, which was about the darker side of being retired, which is, you know, the always missing what you were. And
so maybe that's what it is. It's, you know, it's variations on a theme that Busiek's doing lately, I guess.
Don't and retire, then, Kurt.
Well, he's going into gorillas next, so that's, I guess that's more lighthearted.
So the Astro City 22 was the pick of the week. I really loved it. I'm good happy pick. That overall this series has been really strong. But another issue I really loved was Jupiter Circle number 1, which is the new miniseries, I guess, from Mark Miller. This was
This is the sequel to Jupiter's Legacy.
Jupiter's Legacy.
Okay, so, I missed this. So
Jupiter's Legacy was, you read that whole thing through, did you?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was with Frank Quitely, and it was about legacy, right? So old superheroes from the 40s and 50s. You know, retiring or being there, and another kids had powers and all the trouble that caused. So this Jupiter Circle goes back in time to the 50s.
Ooh.
It's a prequel to the, and so we are spending time with all the original heroes, and the original series artist Frank Quitely only does the cover. Wilfredo Torres does the interiors, and it's a really great throwback style that looks like a 50s sci-fi comic. And so that works perfectly in a story that's basically mostly about what it's like to be a closeted gay superhero in the 50s.
Interesting.
So one of the original heroes is gay, but his public appearance or public face is that he's, you know, it's no mistake this takes place in LA because that was what was going on in Hollywood, right? So it's like to everyone else, you're Blue Bolt, the square jawed, you know,
like Rock Hudson kind of guy.
Rock Hudson superhero, but then in your private life, you're constantly in fear because you are gay and you're having liaisons. You're going to parties at Katharine Hepburn's house, hanging out with all the other gay closeted actors, which all make appearances in here. And then the other problem is that the FBI has been trying to sign your team up to be official government agents. And now J. Edgar Hoover has pictures of you with a man, so he's going to try to blackmail you into becoming government agents. This was really, really great. And it continues Mark Miller's creative resurgence.
Sold that really well. I want to go out and read that now.
Well, if you like, I mean, this is, you will really like this, Paul. This is cool. I mean, it's on the nose, but in a good way, because this is what people went through. And it was really funny. There's a scene where he's at a party at Katharine Hepburn's house. And Katharine Hepburn's house. And they're talking about how the irony of half the couples in Hollywood being in the closet, but they're selling the hetero ideal to mainstream America through their movies.
Right.
And it was just really interesting because, you know, he says at one point, it doesn't matter how many lives I save or how many times I save the world. If someone finds out I like to kiss men, then everything's going to go away. And it was a hard thing to deal with. It's still hard now, and it was even worse then. But
Sounds like something like even if you didn't read Jupiter's Legacy, you could
100%.
Yeah,
because there's no callback to the previous series. This is just a prequel, and everything you need to know is in it. In fact, it opens up and it tells you, you know, because it starts off actually way in the future.
Mm-hmm.
With in like super future, not just our future, like the first miniseries, like people wearing funny goggles and jumpsuits, and they're at a museum that's showing all these costumes, and so there's a little voiceover that sort of gives you the setup. So if you've never read the first one, you can totally just jump on this one.
Cool. Yeah, I guess it just got lost in the big convergent shuffle this week.
Did it get lost in all the millions of number ones from Image Comics?
Yeah. That too, but
this is one. This one is worthy of.
And it's a really smart choice to do like a prequel instead of moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I still think there's stuff you could do with a sequel, and maybe they'll come back and.
I think that's for sure. I really like the little world he created.
Yeah.
So this is interesting because Miles Morales, The Ultimate Spider-Man number 12, is ostensibly the final issue of Ultimate Spider-Man, and I mean,
like all of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Right, of all of Ultimate Spider-Man. And there's going to be a miniseries that wraps up the Ultimate Universe.
But at the end of this, it says Miles Morales will next appear in Secret Wars.
Right, but then there's, you know, the next page is the ad for the miniseries.
Okay. Which is part of Secret Wars?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
As a final issue for such a monumental book, I thought this was, I don't want to say a failure, but it didn't feel like a final issue to something that's been 15 years.
Well, it's hard. I mean, it's because it's.
We mentioned it last month, Josh and I, that
right.
A lot of balls in the air for them to have to lead into the final issue. And I realize Miles isn't going anywhere, but the book is going somewhere, and this universe is going somewhere, and it's rough in that sense.
But then the other thing I was thinking about that going through this, I was like, this, I mean, it's kind of a regular adventure, you know, and I mean, it's got Miles' dad and it's got Genki in it and, you know, it's got the Ultimates. So, I mean, it's sort of a crazy team up, but like the Ultimate Universe isn't what it once was.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of can't have all of those characters all teamed up. And the other thing is, how many different milestone issues of, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man right. have there been where it's like a big jam issue or, you know, so like how many more tricks are there, like,
right.
you know, up the sleeve to really give the universe a big send-off? Because it's not just the end of Ultimate Spider-Man. It's like the end of the Ultimate.
Well, so I assume you're scrolling like I am. If you scroll past the letters column.
Right.
Next month, grand opening, grand closing, Ultimate End number one, and it's Spider-Man with the Ultimates. And it's all drawn by David Marquez and looks freaking awesome. So
good.
I assume that will be the wrap-up for the
Yeah, but even for, like, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, for the series proper, you know, like just a regular issue, like, it still feels like not a lot of pomp and circumstance.
Yeah, so if you recall last month, he was
Dr. Doom.
Captured by Hydra and Dr. Doom, and because his girlfriend, Kate Bishop's family's Hydra, and they also kidnapped his father and some other people. And so in this issue, he breaks free and he gets some help from Cloak and Dagger and from that chick whose name I can never remember, the Boom. The Gilmore Girls analogs.
Oh, and, I can't think of the name either.
And then the kid from school who figures out he's Spider-Man and realizes he's been missing.
Judge?
Yeah. And then Kitty Pryde too, right?
Kitty Pryde, right.
This was fun. And then there was a fun little cameo from Jonathan Hickman, which was a callback to something that Bendis would do in Powers all the time. Having some creator in the background being arrested.
Was Bendis in the squad room?
It's like Bendis and David Marquez shaking hands.
I'm assuming that's what it was.
And then Jonathan Hickman in a cosmic suit saying, "It's all my fault." I mean, it was fun. It was a good issue. It just felt like, oh, so it's over, and that was the end.
I guess it just goes to show that Miles is up for bigger and better things
right.
in his future. Like, the Ultimate Universe is sort of, it's winded down. He's the star of it, and I mean, you still have Kitty and, you know, the other characters that you mentioned, but we can barely remember their names. And there's already a Kitty in the 616,
right.
and it's not so different from Ultimate Kitty. So it's, you know, it's time.
Yeah, I just, for 15 years, this is one of the best books out there. And I would probably put it in the top 10 most important books of the last decade and a half.
Sure.
So as a final issue, it was weird. But as just a regular issue, it was really good, as it's all been. So I guess we'll see what happens next with Miles. And I'm really curious to see how this all shakes out, but we'll talk about that when it happens.
Yeah. Rebels number one.
Do you know what this is?
Yeah, I read this.
Oh, good. Josh was getting ready to leave for the sun planet or wherever he went. And he sent me an email that said, don't sleep on Rebels number one. Because I haven't been reading any Dark Horse books lately. Whatever they've been putting out, it really hasn't been interesting to me.
Yeah.
But this is a Dark Horse comic, and I think he knew I wouldn't see it. So he sent me a reminder, and it's Brian Wood's book about the American Revolution. And I thought, oh, because it felt very much kind of like Vikings in that it's a straight-up historical tale. There's no superheroes. There's no hidden sci-fi element. There's not any monsters. It's just a straight-up
historical fiction story. The only thing, at the beginning, it says, like, it describes the world of the Revolutionary War, and then it says, no, it's not 2015. This is 1775 or whatever. Right. And so, like, so I was like, okay, so there's going to be a little bit of, like, social commentary here about the modern day, but otherwise, yeah, it's pretty much like a Northlanders kind of book, and it's Andrea Muti on interior art, and then Tula Lote on the cover, if I've got that name right. But I was struck by the cover, and I think I saw an ad for it on like the Diamond Previews webpage. Mm-hmm. So whatever they spent on that, it at least got one guy reading it. So
they got the $3.99 or $2.99, whatever it cost. It's kind of funny that Josh isn't here because the entire book takes place in New Hampshire.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, man, Josh is going to be here for this, but it's really good.
Which it takes place in the disputed territory between New Hampshire and New York, which would eventually become Vermont. So there's this land there that has been given to New York, but it's part of New Hampshire. And so the people who live there consider themselves from New Hampshire, and they're like, no, we don't want to leave. And the Redcoats have been dispatched to make them leave, but so there's been lots of shooting. And it's not the kind of tale where it's like, oh, there's Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, and it's happening in Philadelphia and Boston and New York. This is out in the hinterlands of the United States at the time. And
there's one big cameo. There's Ethan Allen, isn't
there? Sure. And who doesn't love an Ethan Allen cameo?
Certainly. Yeah.
But I really liked this a lot. And I hope that they hope that this is going to be like another Northlanders that goes for like six trades worth of stories. And because I could be
is this
fine.
A mini? I think this is a mini series.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I think I saw like one of six or something on there somewhere, but maybe Rebels 2 or something like.
Hey, I'm just shocked this exists.
Yeah, the other cool thing about it, like I was like I thought it was one thing, like I thought it was going to be about this kid and his dad, and sort of it reminded me of the Mel Gibson Patriot movie,
right?
Because he's like teaching, to teach the kid how to shoot and everything, and the kid from Everwood. And who didn't go on to be in Guardians of the Galaxy. And then there's like a throwaway line. It was like, dad would be dead within a year or something like that. So I was like, oh, okay. It's not about a dad and a son. It's about something else. And also sort of a little bit of like autobiographical stuff, because there's that like stammer in there. And, right. And Brian Wood has that stammer. And
there's definitely a cover in the front page about it being a mini or being one of six.
I thought it was some, I don't know.
It could have been solicited that way.
Maybe I'm mixing it up with something else. But
it goes on for a long time, because I really like that this book exists. And they got a lot of mileage out of Northlanders. Granted, it's sort of more in the wheelhouse.
I mean, given the pitch of what Northlanders is, that did go on for a surprisingly long time, and had a lot of fun, going into different kinds of stories and moving around.
I love Redcoats getting mowed down by muskets.
Certainly.
Oh wait a minute! Here we go. A well-regulated militia is the title of the first arc. This is part one of six.
Okay, so it's going to be a series of minis then, probably.
Hopefully.
Cool. So, yeah, so...
Jordi Belair in colors, as she does for all comics.
Really, really, really good-looking book.
Yeah, if you're into if you're into history at all, this, or, non-traditional, non-superhero comics, this was really great.
Mm-hmm.
And the art's wonderful. The story's really interesting. I mean, this is not a part of history I'm well acquainted with. I didn't really know about this part of New Hampshire. It's called the New Hampshire Grants, I think. And I had to look it up afterwards because I was really curious about it. So
yeah, I'm more of a world history guy, but this was like in my blind spot, but it's fun.
So that was Rebels number one. Now, Nameless number three. Are you reading this?
I figured this is something that would probably be safer to read in a collection because it would be crazy stuff.
Damn it, Paul, because I'm looking for someone to explain to me what's going
on. Oh, no. That's not going to happen.
This book's weird, dude. It's It's cool. It's about.
I flipped through the first one. I was like, nope. this is probably not a single issue kind of book. This is.
It's really interesting. It's about the confluence of, well, not about, but it features heavily the confluence of science and magic. So there's an asteroid hurtling towards Earth, and you know, there's the normal, you know, Armageddon scenario where a bunch of guys are going up there to blow it up, or at least blow it off course. But then they discover there's a rune on the asteroid, so they call upon these. Guy nameless who's a magician to help them. And so there's a lot of stuff about magic versus science and technology, but this issue went off the weird deep end. In fact, the final page was so disturbing. Super disturbing that I don't even know where this book's going to go next. So I feel like he may have had the pages laced in LSD so that when I was holding it, it started absorbing into my skin, and now I'm just seeing things. But it's a super disturbing final page.
Can you spoil? We have a spoiler warning. You can.
Well,
say
you haven't read it, but one of the main character is
I'll forget.
Trussed up by these aliens or whatever, and he's got no arms and no legs, and his penis is hacked off, and there's tentacles coming in and out of his various holes and appendages.
That doesn't sound pleasant.
No, it's not. In fact, I just closed the issue because I don't want to look at it anymore.
It caused you pain.
It's weird. It's good. And Burnham, Chris Burnham on art is wonderful. You know, they make a great pair. It's just a really, really disturbing and strange. I read one and two are really fun, sort of science adventure. We got to go stop this asteroid. And then it just takes a really strange and dark turn with issue three.
It gets into more of the, I don't know, supernatural stuff, the magic stuff. Or
no pulse. I have it seared in my brain now, the image of him and with his mouth pried open. And Jesus. All right. Let's talk about something more pleasant, please.
Spider-Woman number 6. Mm-hmm. I believe I added Spider-Woman number 1 to the list while I was still regular on the show. And I was kind of disappointed with it because it was all in the Spider-Verse stuff.
Right, yes.
And I think by that time we'd already seen pictures of what Spider-Woman's new costume was going to look like, and it had a very different direction than what that was. So I said, let's...
It was Greg Land at that point, wasn't it?
Maybe. It was of that tone, but I was like, okay, people I've been talking to have been saying good things about a lot of the Spider-Women books, so like Spider-Woman, Silk, and Spider-Gwen, a lot of people have been digging, so I was like, it's okay, time to check those out. So check out Spider-Woman, and this is like in the vein of Superior Foes of Spider-Man, right. all those like sort of funny street-level books that I think came out of Fraction and Aja's Hawkeye, yeah. So I think Superior Foes was like the first of those to feel like, okay, now this is a theme now. Secret Avengers. I would count like She-Hulk in there too, and also Spider-Woman is a private investigator right down the hall from She-Hulk's office. So it's very much in the family of those books. And the premise right now, it started earlier than this issue. A bunch of like, I wouldn't even say like, okay, if the Superior Foes were like C-list villains,
yeah,
these are like G-list villains, like Porcupine and what was the other one? Senor Suerte, who's like Mr. Luck.
You're making this
like
all
a
up.
He has a roulette thing on his chest, so like he has to start off the roulette wheel. And it has to finish before his like fists charge up with electricity.
Okay, so he's that like, makes, I'm that totally he's makes
like,
sense.
And I'm going to get practical. You right now. Yeah, and he like hits the thing and like, yeah. And so there's like all these really like the kangaroo, like ridiculous villains. All of their significant others have been abducted, kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And Spider-Woman's responsible for trying to track them down, even though they're villains. She's a private investigator, and she's going to take on that role because presumably a lot of these like wives and girlfriends are not guilty of anything. They're just they just have horrible taste in, you know, and boyfriends. So like you're going out with the kangaroo or the porcupine,
which on a number of levels is horrible.
Yeah, so it's like if you're going to go out with a villain, like aim a little higher, like you know.
Right.
Exactly. I don't know.
Shocker.
Shocker. Yeah, that's at least a rung up.
Dr. Doom.
But it's, you know, it's fun. It's Dennis Hopeless and Javier Rodriguez mm-hmm. at this point. So again, it's this, you're taking the artist from She-Hulk, and now it's that same kind of vibe. It just feels like that family of books. And
the first issue you read, or was it?
This is the first issue I read since number one, which
I know in issue five this team was on it. I don't know how many issues they've done though.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So I jumped in because I knew we were going to do the show. So let's try something different. So I checked that out, and I was glad I did. Spider-Woman Jessica has always been sort of a fun character. She kind of has like bad luck in life.
Right.
So it fits into that Superior Foes and like Hawkeye vibe of sort of like sweet and low down kind of stories. So
it's interesting that they keep this corner of the Marvel Universe alive, because it doesn't really light up the sales charts.
Yeah,
but none of those books are ever really super popular, but they seem to like it because they keep putting more of them out in this style, the storytelling.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like maybe it's just like they can sneak them in there, you know. And I haven't been paying attention to like who all the editors of all of those are, mm-hmm. like if there's just a shared sensibility or something. But as long as they're making a whole bunch of money on you know. Like Secret Wars stuff, they can sneak in these things here and there.
Right.
And, you know, they'll eventually get canceled, but they start up another one with give another character a chance to shine. So,
well, it's fine.
I think if you liked all those books, this is, you know, that same kind of vibe. And we liked Hopeless on, you know, Avengers Arena and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's good.
So he's doing good stuff. So I'm glad that it got away from the Spider-Verse stuff and came into its own.
Well, if you like this kind of book, there's the Superior Foes, there's Secret Avengers, there's Hawkeye, there's She-Hulk. They got collections of all those. You can check them out at fanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you find the portal to Amazon that helps us out, gives us a little piece of the sale, comes out of Amazon's pocket, and helps us keep the lights on. That's how you can really, really help the show by banking your everyday purchases. You're probably making them at Amazon anyway. You might as well help us out while you're doing it. Also, fanboy.com/registration. That's where you can help us out directly with $3 a month or $30 a year. You can become an iFanboy member. You can also make a straight-up donation there. And so if you're, as Josh and I said, if you are a crazy billionaire and or a millionaire, you can always go there. And we'll take anything, really. If you want to donate kroners or doubloons, we will also help you out. But you know,
you'd be like Magwitch from The Great Expectations and just be a great mysterious benefactor.
Exactly.
There you go.
We don't know. In fact, I know someone who got a mysterious benefit unrelated to comics, who had something sent to them and don't know who it was, but they were very appreciative of it. You can do that all through fanboy.com/registration. So we thank everyone who does that. They're the ones who keep the show going. We appreciate it very much. So this week, Paul,
yeah,
DC goes deep into Convergence, and what Convergence is the storytelling device that allows DC to move editorial offices from New York to Burbank. So on the side, they've been putting together this event called Convergence, and that's all I'm prepared. That's all I'm confident in saying, because I'm not sure I really understand what's going on here. So last week we had Convergence number 0, and I said that I felt like I was drunk when I was reading it because I didn't understand. It was very confusing, and I didn't understand what was happening.
It's a lot of lore. It's a lot of setup for what.
So this week we had issue number 1 plus the 10 tie-in issues, and so while this is happening, there ain't no more DC books. This is all that's coming out.
Yeah.
So for the month of April and May, there's going to be 40 issues. There's 10 a week for the first month, issue 1s, then 10 a week, issue 2 next month, and then we'll be back to normal. So this is happening. You tell me, Paul, what you think. What is the log line for this event?
What's the log line for this?
What's the elevator pitch? What is this event about?
This event is a combination. You know, I like my it's like this crossed with this
right.
kind of pitches. Mm-hmm. It's Stephen King's Under the Dome,
yes,
crossed with Hunger Games.
Okay, well, crossed with, like, I was definitely going to bring up the Under the Dome comparison later, but
that's straight up.
So in the zero issue, Superman runs into Brainiac, and Brainiac has all these dome cities from all these dimensions, and in this issue, they got to fight. But it's all pre Flashpoint and
right.
And what's the other universe? Pre Flashpoint and something else.
Okay, you have this week is like Gotham week apparently.
Yeah, they're all Gotham City.
So it's you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different Gothams. One is pre Flashpoint Gotham City. One is El Inferno, which we only see in one book.
It's like Old West Gotham.
Old West, yeah. And then Flashpoint Gotham City.
All right.
And then New York City Angor, which is like a Marvel universe in the 90s, sort of.
Yeah.
You get the extremists. So there's like sort of vague analogs of Marvel villains. Like there's a Dr. Octopus guy.
Hollywood, California, apparently.
Yeah, Hollywood, California, so the Zoo Crew. So Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew, which is the fun part. Not a whole lot of mixing and mashing alternate worlds. Like I said, El Inferno, there's only one part at the beginning of the Oracle and Nightwing book.
Right.
And then you've got the Thanagarians in there, so there's an evil Hawkgirl and Hawkman.
When this was first announced, I thought, okay, this could be fun. They basically said they were going to take all these different characters, and they showed us some promo art of all these different old school characters.
Sure.
And I thought, okay, this will be fun in like a Contest of Champions kind of way. Like we'll just dump a bunch of characters together and watch them bounce off each other. And that'll be fun. So I read all the issues this week.
Right.
Instead, we got an episode of Under the Dome in each issue.
Yeah.
In which, so apparently these domes appeared over these cities. And a year ago, and so they've been living for a year. So what we got was a bunch of dramas about people living in a domed city for a year, and I just don't care. I don't care about that at all.
There's some, like, and some of them use it well, and some of them it kind of gets in the way of the character stories that they're trying to tell. Like, I think, yeah, we're going to jump around a bit. I think the Batgirls issue,
Before we get into that, I'm going to list them off just so everyone knows ahead of time. So we Convergence number one, we Convergence Adam number one, Convergence Batgirl number one, Convergence Batman and Robin number one, Convergence Harley Quinn number one, Convergence Justice League number one, Convergence Nightwing and Oracle number one, Convergence The Question number one, Convergence Speed Force number one, Convergence Superman number one, Convergence The Titans number one.
Right.
Okay, continue.
Good dedication listing Convergence before.
I'm now going to pass the titles.
Okay. It's like Marvel's The Avengers all over again. All right. So the Batgirls one I was really looking forward to because I like Stephanie Brown.
I read that one first and it was lame.
Yes. It was what? It was lame?
Lame.
Yeah. It was there's cool character stuff with like Stephanie and Cassandra Cain living together. But then all the dome stuff gets in the way and like Catman's in it for no reason whatsoever.
Well, he's the champion of the other city, isn't he?
He's the champion of the other city, but like it just gets in the way. Like if you only have two issues to tell the story, it's
that's the problem. What is the story you're telling?
Right.
You're either telling this Under the Dome story of these people trapped under this dome, or you're telling the fight story of the Contest of Champion, you know, your champion versus my champion and the fight.
Mm-hmm.
You tell one or the other, but by telling partially both in the one issue they've got plus the next one, it muddles. I don't know what I'm reading here. Why? Why am I reading this dome story? Because it's not going to continue. It's over in next month. This is not like a thing that's going to happen anymore.
Of all of these, so there's 10 issues this week. Of all of these, there's two that I really liked, but I'd only give them like 4 stars.
Yes.
And then the others are pretty middling, so they'd be like 2 stars.
I would give 3 to 4 stars to 1, 2, 3 of them. And the rest would be 2 or 1 stars.
Okay, let me guess.
Can guess which three I like.
Okay, well, I'll say that. The three I liked, which should probably match up with you.
Okay.
The Question.
Okay.
And I like the Superman one.
Yes.
And there's a third one in there. Is it Harley by any chance?
No, it was Justice League, strangely.
Justice League. Okay, I really didn't like Justice League.
I thought that was fun. I liked the characters. That one felt like it was mostly Under the Dome stuff, but I liked the characterization. I thought it was funny. I really liked Superman.
Superman is good, and Superman is probably the best looking one.
A number of reasons. First of all, Lee Weeks. The other problem with the series is because it's being produced on the side, you don't really have any of the normal creative teams and or creators that really work on books. So,
you remember this happening before with an event?
Yeah.
Maybe Flashpoint.
So it's tough. You don't have a lot of high level creators working this book. Superman, on the other hand, is drawn by Lee Weeks. Lee Weeks, one of my all-time favorite artists.
Mm-hmm. So it was Dan Jurgens and Lee Weeks, right?
And Dan Jurgens can write a Superman story. It may be older style, but he can write it. He knows those characters. And between him and Lee Weeks, I thought Superman was really great. Plus, it just harkened back to what the problems were with the current Superman.
Right.
You know, it just made very clear, like, oh, in comparison, This new Superman sucks.
I liked that two of your favorites, so Superman and Justice League, involve people getting so bored under the dome that they get pregnant.
Right? So well, what else are you going to do?
Superman and Lois, and then Jesse Quick is going into labor at the beginning of Justice League.
Right.
Looking very glamorous, might I add, going into labor.
I thought that was a really interesting line. Just to get back to Superman for a second, there's a really interesting line when he gets... So the whole point of the dome is that it also takes away everybody's powers. So until the dome is lifted, which it happens in the middle of all these stories, all these superheroes are powerless. And so Clark's been out fighting crime just in a black costume because he can't not. But in the middle of the fight, he gets his powers back. He reveals himself to be Superman with the underwear on the outside and the cape and saves the day. And then he goes home to Lois and she says, "My Superman has returned." And I thought that was a very interesting line to use because comparatively... You know, you don't see this guy ever anymore. So it was nice to see him and Lois and all that stuff.
And that you know, the traditional Superman costume that we miss so much and not the high-collared thing because it's pre-New 52 Superman.
Right, so, and then he fights Shazam from Flashpoint. I thought this one did a good job of what you thought it would be, which was the two worlds mashing up together. So in this one, the Justice League from Flashpoint, which includes... Thomas Wayne, Batman, and Cyborg, and Shazam, and Abin Sur, plus the creepy, skinny Superman from that world.
Yeah.
You know, end up going up against Superman. I thought this was really, I thought genuinely this was a good issue.
I think so too. I think it was really strong.
I think the question was good, though not as good as I was hoping it to be, because a lot of it was just angst over living under the dome.
Yeah, I think.
And that was Greg Rucka writing the question
with Coley Hamner on art. And the last we saw that was the backups on Detective Comics when he was writing Batwoman. I think the thing with the question issue is that, like, because these are characters and like it's Renee, Question, and Two-Face, mm-hmm. and they have such a storied history from a bunch of different events. And over a long period of time, and you really associate those creators with them. Because we're seeing a lot of returns of like fan favorite characters, but they're not necessarily written or drawn by the teams that we know before. Like with Batgirl, like
that was the big problem with Batgirl. It didn't sound
that's
like
not
Batgirl.
Brian Q. Miller.
Yeah,
and so with the Question, I think it's like if we want to return to the Question Two-Face story, rather it just be a Question Two-Face story and not something stuck in this weird under the dome status quo.
Yeah,
it sort of like sours it. But I think he does a really good job of telling an interesting story about those two characters under the dome. So with the
I love
the
rugged,
he has,
bearded Two-Face, but only we put him on one side because his face
doesn't grow. And then that it's sort of like a really interesting also character study of Two-Face and like how he would deal with that.
Right.
There's some interesting stuff that they touch on. Again, a lot of it gets lost in all the different things they're trying to cram into a two-issue story. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of these books like The Atom.
Oh, I thought The Atom was unreadable.
Well, I'm saying the interesting thing in The Atom is it talks about like sort of the like they have a cabin fever, like cabin fever being stuck under the dome and a bunch of them go stir crazy. So like they touch on that in The Atom. They touch on that in Harley, Harley Quinn, which I think does some interesting stuff with it, where like Harley Quinn actually kind of gets better.
Oh, I did like that one.
And is more lucid and she starts a relationship with a cop it was sort of like a meet cute where she was trying to rob a hyena skull or something. And
I like the Dick Sprang Joker that would appear in her subconscious. That was
fun. Yeah.
I like that bit. But God, overall, like you just triggered with The Atom because like that, I thought The Atom was unreadable. I thought Speed Force was unreadable. I didn't even Nightwing and Oracle I was really looking forward to because that's like my all time favorite comics romance, and I didn't even think that was that good. I don't know. This is Batman and Robin didn't really like.
It was a lot of them were just like really just middling stuff. Like I'll stand up for Speed Force a little bit because not just because of the Zoo Crew thing, but they actually do a good job of establishing like the Superman issue that there's two worlds that are going to be fighting, mm-hmm. and so you have Wally and I forgot to mention. When you talk about the Speed Force book, you got to talk about the fact that the kids are back.
Well, that's why I couldn't read it, Paul.
Everybody's been clamoring for the return of Wally West and like their Wally West. And here's the catch. The kids have to come with them. So the creepy kids,
yeah.
Who aren't that bad. Like, I think one of the big annoying things about the kids from that run when they were introduced was like the way they were drawn. Sure. The fact that like the boy could get like all muscly and stuff, and it was just like a really disturbing image. So like that's downplayed here. But
I was just hoping that a book called Speed Force would feature the whole Flash family.
That's what I was expecting.
And not just the kids who are annoying and awful.
Like looking at the names on like going down the list of what was coming out this week, like Speed Force was like up like very high in terms of things I was looking forward to, because I like the like the last time we saw the Speed Force, and you have, you know, Jesse Quick and Jay and stuff, and
Max Mercury and Impulse.
Max Mercury, right? Yeah, and I hoped that we could, you know, get that, but that was not the case. So it's just Wally and the kids, and then Fastback from the Zoo Crew, which was I thought was funny because like they're in this 2-issue arc. The champion that they're facing is Wonder Woman from Flashpoint. So it's like this super fast anthropomorphic. Is he a turtle? I don't know what Fastback is.
I
guess he's a turtle.
That's the irony, I guess.
He looks fast. He actually looks like a Koopa or something from the Mario games. But then like you have like scary Flashpoint Wonder Woman coming in and like super serious in this world of like goats and other like animals wandering around. So like I thought like maybe issue 2 has some promise, like to at least be kind of funny in a, you know, the dissonance at least.
I just feel like this entire event is another microcosm of DC's problems. Like it should have been really fun way to look to throw all these characters together that don't ever.
That's what we were expecting. Yeah.
But instead, it's this weird sort of angsty. It felt very 90s. Like it just felt off tonally, and I don't have any desire to read any more of this.
Do we any more of it? Like any of them? Like well, even just, like
I'm so I'm read, soured like, on the whole thing now. Like I'm going to read the next Superman. I'm going to read the Doc Shaner, Jeff Parker, Shazam one.
Certainly,
but. I don't think I'm going to read them all next week. I don't know.
I think I might be reading all of them. Just.
I do miss the look of the characters, and I wonder I'm never going to see them again.
Yeah. I don't know. I think maybe, I guess for like, I think I'm going to check out all of the number one issues from Convergence just to try them. But yeah, I guess I'll give a pass to I don't want to read the Atom number 2.
I don't even want to read Batgirl number 2. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It didn't feel like Stephanie Brown. They didn't really do anything interesting with her and Rob, or Tim and Cass together.
Yeah,
she was moping the whole time.
Right.
I was just like, I don't want to read that. I'll just go read the old trades.
I definitely don't want to read the mainline Convergence book.
Yeah, I don't even.
That's like because I read Convergence. I tried reading Convergence 0 and Convergence 1, and I gave up halfway through. It was just so dry.
And also, there was the same speech in every issue.
Definitely not.
Character gives to the dome people, and you're just like, okay, I can skip these three pages because I've read this 4 times already.
Can we at least talk about Convergence Titans number 1,
okay,
which continues the ridiculous saga of Roy Harper? The last page of that is hilarious.
Oh, Roy.
Where he's given the option to save his daughter from another dimension because the one is dead.
The last page is crazy.
The best page. And then next to him is Starfire. And then on the other side is Donna Troy. And he's got his guns up. He's got like a shotgun coming out of his robot arm. And so it's like double barrel, and then he makes the choice, and the way they do it, they visualize it, is by one barrel going left and one barrel going right, and then it shoots.
Right, so to save what may or may not be his daughter, who has already previously been dead, he has to kill Starfire and Wonder Girl, or Troya, however you want to call her. And
yeah.
Jesus.
It's the most ridiculous page. And it also, that issue starts with a wonderful recap of Roy Harper's ridiculous life and career as a vigilante.
Roy Harper, this is your life. Wow, it's fucked up.
Here's the other thing we didn't mention that's weird about the Titans issue. The superheroes, while they're under the dome for those 12 months, don't have their superpowers.
Right.
So that's why Superman is dressed up as like the vigilante or whatever.
Right.
Or like Snake Eyes. And in this, like, Roy doesn't have superpowers, but he has a bionic arm.
Right.
And for those 12 months, his bionic arm doesn't work.
That's weird. That's just science.
So I don't understand the rules of that. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that guy's smartphone shouldn't be working?
If it augments your ability to fight crime or to...
It's a very specific dome.
To cause crime. Yeah, it's like it's more magic than science fiction then. Like it's more like the No More Mutants thing.
Right.
Than really, like any kind of science fiction.
I'm really torn here between wanting to see these old characters again and then not liking anything that's happening to them.
Yeah, I think I think you're like, oh, cool, we get to see, you know, like some of them are cool because the creative team and the characters involved, like the Shazam story. That's right. Like, I think, like the top on a lot of people's list for Convergence. Right. That's the one that keeps coming up. But then some of them are just like, oh, I mean, it would be great to see, you know, Dick and Barbara again as Nightwing and Oracle, but it gets lost in this, I don't know, it's pretty murky.
So weird. Well, that's Convergence. Paul, you're going to be covering all these over where you are. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, we did a whole episode on these 10 issues. So this will be coming out. It'll be out by the time this is out. So you'll hear me expressing a lot of the same thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know that Josh is going to put up with this kind of discussion every week.
Yeah, so like 6 weeks. So. Next week we're not doing a full episode on it. I think we're just going to do a check-in and say, like, if you're going to read like two of these 10, grab these two. So... I think that's what our coverage is going to be, because this is, yeah.
All right, so those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. Go to iFanboy.com. You can find the post for this show. You can comment on these books. You can give us your Convergence rundown and tell us what you read, what you liked, what you didn't like, what you'll be continuing to read going forward over there at iFanboy.com. And so now we have enough time, Paul, to check in with one email.
All right.
Rachel writes in, Rachel A., and says, I've been giving this topic some serious thought. Why is Superman so criticized as being overpowered? Clark Kent is a regular guy that has a low-paying job in a dying industry. He can never have kids with the woman he loves. Sure, he gets his strength from the yellow sun or from our solar system, but what about all the other systems that have red suns? Bruce Wayne, on the other hand, is a billionaire that really is seen at work. He has countless number of model girlfriends to call on. He is a tool for any and all situations. Somehow his special powers that he's a master planner and can pull a deus ex machina solution out of his bat butt. I think it's the villains that bring the fans to Batman and drive away from Superman. What are your thoughts?
I think it's the villains that bring the fans to Batman and drive away from Superman. Like, I mean, that's valid. I think Batman has the coolest rogues gallery aside from the Flash.
I don't think
the
Superman has a bad villains. I don't.
I think Superman has really interesting villains, but you have to think outside of the box to make
them. Why they're villains for him?
Yeah. And for them to do, like, because they're very simple. Like, you got like Lex Luthor and Toy Man. They're very simple characters. Whereas like Batman, I think there's a ton of different options for what you can do with like a Mr. Freeze or a Joker. Mm-hmm. And there's like immediately you can rifle off a bunch of different kinds of stories. Like, anybody could pitch like a great Batman story in terms of his villains. With Superman, I think it's a little trickier.
Yeah, listen, I think
there's a lot of variables.
No one's going to dispute that Batman has better villains than Superman. I just don't think Superman's villains are the problem. You know, why is Superman?
Well, the thing that people cite is that he's overpowered.
Right. So the question is, why is he criticized for being overpowered? I think the answer is because people don't tend to want aspirational entertainment anymore.
Mm.
They like what is the current trend in all of television right now? It's all the tortured anti-hero.
Right.
There's very rarely a good guy, girl, main character.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but I mean, I'm enjoying Daredevil right now, but I will admit that falls into that category of, you know, a sort of an anti-hero and very much a tortured character. But it's one of the reasons that the Flash on TV has been so refreshing.
Right, that's one. And I think
that he's an aspirational hero.
I'd point to Captain America in the movies as well as being one like that. But for the most part, if you know, every popular TV show or every zeitgeisty TV show is about some reprobate character.
Right.
And not to say Batman is one of those, but he is the more tortured and dark of the two.
Yeah.
So people tend to gravitate towards that guy. Then, I mean, it's always been that way. Like, Han Solo is more popular than Luke Skywalker. Han Solo is more of the Batman, and Luke's more the Superman in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wolverine's the most popular X-Men. It's just, I think it's human nature.
So I think you're right that there is a tonal thing like that, that it's aspirational versus like an anti-hero or gritty story. But I think it's also like the scale of what kind of story you tell. Like mm-hmm. with a Superman story, like it's almost like every Superman story has to be like a final boss battle.
Right.
Because just about the scale, like where he fights, like he fights up in the sky. Like you can't do like a cool little intimate crime story.
Right.
I mean, you can, but you have to be pretty creative about it. It's much easier to pitch something like that for Batman. You can tell these smaller scale stories. You have, I think there's much more range in what Batman can do based on his limitations. Limitations are sort of like the kernel of great stories.
Right. The thing of Batman's limitations are overt.
Yeah. When you're forced into a corner and like, I can only do this, it forces you to think about the story in a much more complicated way than, you know, with a more operatic thing that you'd have to do with Superman.
The thing with Superman is his limitations and his weaknesses are not overt. And what they are less conducive to exciting storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what kind of storyline that's going to be based around his loneliness or ostracization is going to make for a compelling read.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as compelling as just a guy who gets to punch people and is vulnerable to guns and knives and things. Like, the storylines I always like for Superman, the best are the ones that delve into his, not psychological torment's the wrong word, because he's not a tortured character, but that delve into the difficulties of being Superman.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily that he can't punch his way out of a problem, it's that he can't turn it off, or he will outlive everybody he loves, or... You know,
those are more abstract. Those are...
Yeah, exactly. It's an abstract problem.
With Superman, the concern isn't, is he going to get hurt? He's like, I have to save everybody. I have to protect people from getting hurt.
Or I couldn't protect my dad.
I couldn't protect my dad. With Batman, he has to protect everybody, but also he could get seriously injured. He could get hurt too. And although we know in the back of our minds that Batman, you know, is going to make it out okay, with Superman, it's harder to be like, oh no, is he going to get through this okay? Because, you know, he's a demigod.
So. I think that what's interesting is that the never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way is often more interesting not in a serialized format. The best Superman stories tend to be the one-offs, the All-Star Superman stories like that, the ones that get to tell one story with a beginning, middle, and an end that examines who Superman is and doesn't go on forever. Although Jeff Johns did it fantastically when he was writing Action Comics. So, you know.
But even those are like their little chapters, you know. Like his Legion of Superhero stories, that's one of my favorites that I point out to people. And then he did the Brainiac stuff. But it's like, it's not like, and like I liked the beginning of like the whole New Krypton thing. I thought that was a really interesting idea. But there aren't as many like longer Superman arcs that tell like a big long story.
Right.
It is those like great one-shots.
Exactly. Or the Elseworlds ones.
Elseworld things, yeah.
So it's tough. It's the eternal dilemma, right? Why is Superman...
Yeah, and it's funny because like I love Superman and I love great Superman stories, but I'm shocked when I find a good one. Like when a new one comes... I saved Superman for the end of the Convergence read this week. Not because I was savoring it, but just because like I'll just read that later. Like I just never grabbed it next. And finally, that was the last one. And I was like, this is really good. So I just like, I get it. I get why people don't like Superman. But at the same time, like I love Superman. And there are some times where I can articulate the why, but there are other times where it's like, yep, it's just, he's not for everybody.
There you go. Thank you, Rachel. That was a great question. She wrote us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can also call her whisper line at 888-FANBOY 326-2697. If you do that, tell us who you are and where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds. And also people who email in should also tell us where they're from. We'd like to know where emails are coming in from. So let's plug some stuff, Paul. Plug your stuff.
Okay, you can head over to panels.net. We've got new content every day. We put up stuff on Saturdays and Sundays too. So all kinds of coverage. We did an open call recently. We've got, I've lost count of how many contributors we have. It's a lot, but that means we have a lot of different perspectives from all different kinds of walks of life. And that's the cool thing about panels. So great coverage over there. I'm working on some stuff. I'm actually working on a review of the Pizza Dog action figure that just came out. So I'm going to do a little photo shoot with him once the sun comes out, hopefully soon.
In July?
Give it a few days. But anyway, not this weekend. But yeah, we do that. We do the O Comics podcast. That's me with Preethi Chibber and Brian McNamara guested this week to talk about Convergence. We're going to be talking about the Daredevil show. What else? We're doing a New Frontier Book of the Month discussion. So look for that later this month.
That's a perfect segue to the Spotlight and Darwin Cook panel video. As we teased before, we had the iFanboy reunion last weekend at WonderCon, where Josh and I got together with Ron. Funny, had not been in the same room together for 3 years up until the Saturday before.
Three years? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was really funny. And so we went and we hosted the Darwin Cook Spotlight panel. We recorded that on video, which almost didn't happen until the very last moment. So you can watch that video. There's a post for it on iFanboy.com, but you can also go to youtube.com/iFanboy to our YouTube page. It's there. It's the full 46 minutes of the panel. And Darwin is exceptionally candid in his response. This is to our questions. And he's always fun to interview. So you can check that out over at iFanboy.com. Also, Paul mentioned they're talking about Daredevil over at panels. We'll be talking about Daredevil here at some point, whenever Josh gets back and is able to watch 13 episodes of a TV show. So it could be 2017, hopefully sooner than that. But we'll be talking about Daredevil soon. And then in a couple of weeks, we'll be having the Avengers Age of Ultron podcast, because that movie comes out in 3 weeks. So
Yay. You
can look forward to a Daredevil podcast and then the Avengers Age of Ultron podcast coming within the next month over here at iFanboy. It's going to be a fun time to talk about stuff. In the meantime, head over to iFanboy.com, comment on this show, talk about this week's books, find all of our podcasts that I just mentioned and other ones. I've been going through old video shows because editing that show, I was looking at old stuff that we had done to see how we did it and went down a rabbit hole of looking at some of our old. I don't recall any of those shows making them, so it's funny to go, well, what did we talk about for this? And then so you can find out all of that still available at iFanboy.com. Follow us at Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. And individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Fuzzy Typewriter if you want to follow Paul.
Thank you. And if you dig this show, please write a review in iTunes. Better yet, tell your friends about it. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Help spread the iFanboy and panels love. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you can please write a review for panels. Write a review for any podcast you listen to. It always helps people find shows, and it's the everyone who makes those shows really appreciates when you take the few minutes to leave a review on iTunes.
Sometimes it does feel like you're just shouting into a vacuum, and you know, so it's good to hear when new people are finding the show and everything. So we do appreciate that.
So that is it for this week's show. Thanks, Paul, for coming in. I know it was scary your first iFanboy episode, as it can be
for
many people to sit in on the show, but you did a good job.
Thanks for having me. Had a good time.
You're doing a great job at panels. We're very proud of you.
Thank you, man.
And so until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.